money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce fall away at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Welcome to the Locked On Wizards podcast. We've got a very special guest tonight, Joe Kachovic, coming from Cleveland to preview the Wizards and Cavs matchup on Thursday. Locked On podcast comes at you 5 days a week, giving you Wizards insight and analysis and news. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So let's go ahead and jump into it. What we'll be talking about today is a couple pieces of Wizards news. Tim Frazier is back and practicing after his nasal surgery last week. And then we're going to do a preview of the Wizards-Cavaliers matchup. And then we're going to do a throwback Thursday segment talking about some of the finest moments in the different games between the Wizards and Cavs. There's been a lot of classics in recent years, even more about a decade ago, back when Gilbert Arenas was playing LeBron. LeBron's lasted forever, so we'll be talking about that too. So our guest tonight is Joe Kachovic, and he went to high school with me. He is a huge Cleveland sports fan, even though he grew up in Silver Spring and Potomac, Maryland. But we've been playing basketball together ever since we were in middle school. It goes way back, and he's a real basketball nerd, so he's a knowledgeable guy. Joe, how's it going tonight? Thanks so much for joining the Locked On Wizards podcast.
Going great. It was 60 degrees yesterday in Cleveland. Now it's 30 degrees, so back to the snow. And I like how you mentioned I did grow up in the D.C. area, but I'm a Cleveland sports fan. Every Cavs game I went to when they were playing the Wizards at Verizon, I guess now Capital One, many fans would point that out and ask where I was from.
Mm-hmm. And it's crazy these days. Like, the Wizards, even though they've been to playoffs, three out of the last 4 years, their fan base just has not really shown them any love. Like, any time a team like the Cavs or Golden State or someone with a superstar like OKC is playing in the Capital One Arena, it just seems like a road game. And I think the Wizards are ranked very poorly. I've got to double check the numbers, but last time I checked the season, they were in like the bottom four or bottom three for the percent capacity in their stands. Do you have any idea what's wrong with this Wizards fan base?
Growing up, I was born and grew up in Silver Spring and then Potomac. So growing up, I'm a Cleveland sports fan. My dad's from Massillon, Ohio. I went to college here. I was here. But I grew up D.C. You know, I follow the Nationals. Growing up, I had season tickets to the Skins. I think it's kind of the city in general, just the nature of the city. Everyone kind of says this, but, you know, it's a rarity. You and I mean, I lived in D.C. for a couple of years. But it's a rarity for people to, like, grow up and stay in the area forever. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of transplants that come in.
No
doubt. So I experienced that at Skins games, even, you know, we'd be playing a weird team like the Dolphins, and it would be, you know, 30 to 35% Dolphins fans, like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah.
But, I think it's the nature of D.C. a little bit.
Unfortunately, that's the case. So the Wizards returned back from their All-Star break. They were supposed to have two participants, but, of course, John Wall has been injured. He'll stay out probably until mid to late March with recovering from his minor knee surgery. And so Bradley Beal was the lone all-star. And the Wizards still have two roster spots open, but they did hear some good news that Tim Frazier is back with the team and practicing. He had a broken nose against the Bulls last Saturday, two Saturdays ago. And he had a surgery for that. He's got a mask on, and he has no minute restriction or anything like that for the backup point guard role against the Cavaliers tomorrow. The Cavs have I think their only injury is Kevin Love, who's got the broken hand. And is he going to be out the entire year? Is that right, Joe?
No, he should be back, I don't know the exact, but before the playoffs. I think he should be back something like a month to half a month before the playoffs start. Mm-hmm. Actually, where did I hear? It was like 8 games or so before the playoffs. But hopefully now they're looking a little better. You know, the first round can kind of be time to get back in rhythm. And so I remember thinking about it. It was like a month before. Hopefully we have some games that could worry us.
So it's basically like John Wall's timetable for returning to, like right near the tail end of the season?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't as familiar on Wall's timetable just because I follow the Cavs a little more. But.
Makes sense. And you, by the way, you live in Cleveland now, and you've been there for how long working for the Federal Reserve?
Right, so I just moved back in July, so now it's coming up on a year this summer, or like late June, July. But I went to undergrad in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. So I lived here for 4 years from 2009 to 2013, but I've been around in D.C., North Carolina. But yeah, now I'm back. And, you know, it's good to be back.
Mm-hmm. And then your dad, who coached our rec basketball team back in the day, he hails from, I'm going to mispronounce it, Massillon, Ohio, near Cannon?
Massillon, Ohio. Massillon. It's like, a little over an hour south of Cleveland. It's close to Cannon, Ohio, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is. I went there every time I visited my grandparents growing up. So, you know, not much going on in Cannon besides the Hall of Fame, so I've been there.
Right, no doubt. So the only other minor piece of Wizards news before we jump right into this preview, Wizards-Cavs tomorrow, is John Wall announced during these days off that he's planning to go back to school over the summer and fulfill a promise that he made to his late father, who passed away when he was 8 years old. He said he would graduate college, and of course, he jumped right to the NBA, number one pick for the Wizards, in 2010 after just 1 year at University of Kentucky. He'll be going back to Kentucky to pursue his business degree. A lot of players are going back to school these days. They kind of understand that basketball is temporary, and you know, whether it's a promise to their parents or whatever it is, it seems like it's a up and common trend. Wall is very outspoken socially, and he doesn't quite know what he's going to do with that business degree, but he definitely wants to go and graduate college. So we are going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to start previewing the Wizards-Cavaliers matchup, a huge game for both teams, who are kind of in the midst of some new beginnings here. So stay here, stay locked in, for the Locked On Wizards podcast, and we're going to be right back. Hey, I want to tell you guys about the Draft app for fantasy sports. You can increase your chances of winning on Draft up to 80% compared to salary cap sites. That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. And it's not just me, we've got more than 1 million people who have already downloaded the Draft app. You can play in real live NBA right now, be done in less than 5 minutes, and get paid out the very next day. Drafts are filling up every second, so you'll want to join whenever you can. New players get free entry and real money draft to make your first deposit. All you have to do is insert the promo code LOWIZARDS, that's LOWIZARDS for Locked On Wizards. You can play in a real money draft for free just by using that promo code. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure that you'll love it that they're offering Locked On Wizards listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. So just search Draft in the App Store and go to draft.com. Come play for free. Right now, I'm going to be part of this NBA Draft 2, and all you have to do is insert that promo code LOWIZARDS. All right, we are back with the Locked On Wizards podcast. Once again, I'm your host for the night, Noah Getzel from Wizards Extra, and I've got my longtime friend Joe Kachovic on the line with me. Joe, is there a place that people can follow you on Twitter? Get all your Cavaliers insights?
My Twitter account is, right now, it's actually protected, but it's J, my last name, Kachovic, J-K-A-C-H-O-V-E-C. My account's protected, but most of what I do is when I get angry at the Cavs or, you know, something like that, I'll angrily tweet about how much I hate Boston fans or DC fans or, you know, something like that. But, yeah, it's protected right now, but
the requests are about to come pouring through, so be ready for that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it was when I was applying to jobs. So, you know, you never know who's going to look at what.
So the Wizards and Cavs match up Thursday night in Cleveland. They are sitting at the number 3 and 4 spots in the Eastern Conference, with a bit of breathing room between Toronto and then where the Wizards and Cavs stand. The Cavs are 6.5 games back of the Raptors and 4.5 back of the Celtics. And then the Wizards are 8 games back of the Raptors, but just 1.5 behind the Cavaliers. Both teams are playing pretty hot right now. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. The Cavaliers obviously blew up their entire team over trade deadline. We'll see how that pans out for them the rest of the season. And then the Wizards are playing incredibly strong ball. They've had at least 25 assists in a bunch of games in a row, I think more than any other NBA team over the past 9 games since John Wall's absence due to that knee injury. And the Wizards have won 7 of those 9 games, some of them against lesser opponents like the Bulls and the Knicks and the Hawks and the Magic. But they've had some quality wins over the Raptors and Oklahoma City and a couple other teams like that. So what do you think are the keys to this matchup, Joe?
You know, I'm so interested to see all the Cavs pieces coming together. I mean, they're just two kind of quick games. It feels like those trades were made, or the trade deadline was so long ago because of the All-Star break. I'm so interested to see kind of how the Cavs rotation shakes out. It seems like the starters are kind of set, and maybe Jordan Clarkson is going to be the main scorer in the second unit when, you know, guys coming off the bench kind of give that what, you know, Isaiah Thomas or Kyrie did in the past. Obviously not to the extent Kyrie did. But I think the Cavs still have about 10 guys who could be solid rotation guys. So I think it's still going to be interesting to see what, what Ty Lue gets a lot of, I give Ty Lue a lot of flack too, but, you know, how all these pieces fit together. And, you know, the Wizards haven't been playing bad ball. When Wall went out, I don't follow the Wizards a ton, but I was noticing things like Gortat was saying, great team win, and maybe some people were taking shots at Wall. But yeah, I mean, I think if the Cavs look at anything, what they look like against Boston, Boston's not playing great ball. But if they look at anything what they look like against Boston, they should, you know, be favored going into the game. But I'm still really interested to see, I mean, as a Cavs fan, seeing how the new lineups are going to shake out and how the new guys keep performing.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Boston. I think it might have to do with Marcus Smart's self-induced injury after punching that picture frame, so he's been out a while. And I think when you have a guy who just plays as hard as Marcus Smart, like, it's kind of, you know, it just motivates everyone else on the team, so they don't necessarily have someone else who's that crazy and matches that sort of intensity. So maybe that's why they're slowing down a little bit. But I'm a little confused about the Cavs starting lineup. So they went out and made all of these moves, and I don't know why Rodney Hood doesn't start over J.R. Smith, and I don't know why Larry Nance Jr., right. I don't know if he's a small forward or power forward, but I don't see why he doesn't get the nod over Seti Osman. Can you explain the rationale? Is it just chemistry and cohesiveness right now?
So J.R. Smith, the saga of J.R., he didn't have that great of a year last year. Obviously, he was a huge piece, but defensively and offensively in the finals, 2 years ago, and coming back against Golden State. But so last year, his daughter was born extremely prematurely, so he was out for a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And then mentally, it didn't seem like he didn't have a great year last year. I mean, he's always a hot or cold player. And then this year, it recently was reported, he stunk for a lot of the year. Him and Jay Crowder in the starting lineup, and they were 3-and-D guys who could not hit a shot to save their lives and couldn't guard anyone on defense. That's part of why they kept stunk for so many games in a row. But apparently, when Wade first came over, when he signed with us in the offseason, he was named a starter, and it only lasted 5 games or so, and he said, hey, let me come off the bench, give J.R. Smith his starting job back. Mm-hmm. But apparently, mentally, that really was taxing on him, and he never really recovered. I know he even went to Ty Lue at one point and said, yo, put me on the bench. I stink. And Ty Lue said, no, we're sticking with you. And then his name was in trade discussions. And, you know, people are worried they're going to get played. And he had a quote, because he's in the past, I don't want to give too many games, but at least the past 5 or 6 games, he's played like pretty good. I mean, he's hit close to 50% of his threes. Just like playing like a completely different player. And the quote he said on how he's been playing better was, he said, F it. If I'm going to get traded, I'm just going to play like JR. So he's actually been playing better. But I agree. He's also friends with LeBron, which is always a factor, unofficially or officially, and who gets to start for the Cavs. But he's actually been playing better. Hopefully he'll come around and be the 3-and-D guy. But I agree. I mean, you would just on the surface think someone like Rodney Hood would be able to take his spot in the starting lineup. But maybe, you know, mentally, he got benched to start the year, and just he was completely useless the first half of the year. It just he could not do anything. So maybe it's kind of in his psyche. He started for the team for 3 years, over 3 years now. So they're just not trying to mess up the chemistry.
Mm-hmm. That all makes sense. And the past two matchups between the Wizards and Cavs this season, the Cavs won both times. The first one, and J.R. Smith hasn't done anything either of those games. He was 1-for-3 for 3 points back when they faced off. When was this? November 3rd? And then the next game was December 17th. Kyrie wasn't playing. J.R. went 3-of-9 for 7 points. But, I mean, LeBron has been crazy. I mean, he's been amazing all year. Of course, he's an MVP candidate once again. But in the first game, which was 130-122 Cavaliers, Kyrie had 50. So why do I keep saying Kyrie? I'm trying to put him back on your team. I don't know what's going on. But LeBron had 57. He hit 23 of 34 shots, which is 68%, which is just unbelievable. He also had 11 rebounds and 7 assists, and then he got his triple-double the next game. 20 points, 11 rebounds, and 15 assists against the Wizards on December 17th. He actually wasn't the leading scorer for the Cavs. It was Kevin Love that game. So truly dominant performances in both those matchups against the Wizards. Of course, it's kind of just like a routine performance for LeBron at this stage. Is there anyone on the Wizards who could potentially slow down LeBron? I think that it'll probably be Markieff Morris and Otto Porter trying to contain him. The last matchup between the Wizards and Cavs, Porter wasn't playing. He had like a hip injury at the time, so it was Kelly Oubre, who's a much more slighter frame guy, who was checking him for a lot of the time. Do you think the Wizards have any, legitimate options to match his physicality, his size, his athleticism, his court vision, all of those different things he brings to the table?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard when you're talking about, like, even where I do mental gymnastics, like, all right, how can we slow down, you know, in thinking about the finals, how can we stop Durant? You really can't, you know. These guys are going to get, you know, if they have 25-5, it's, you know, a down night for them. Mm-hmm. But I think LeBron, I like Markieff Morris on him, or Marcus Morris in Boston. I feel like with LeBron, you just need someone who's physical, and, you know, he's going to blow by. Whoever's guarding him, he's probably going to blow by, get a couple layups, and fouls. So I think, you know, if you just put someone big on him and try and get under his skin a little bit, push him around, try and bully him, maybe prevent him from getting to the basket a couple times. Mm-hmm. That's what I think is probably the best way to go about defending him. You need, like, real, like, someone who's just, like, a nasty defender who's going to, you know, stick his nose in there and, you know, get physical. That's what I always think is kind of been the best way to guard him, just as a observer for a long time.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the Wizards don't necessarily have anyone who's just known as being, like, a defensive menace. I guess Kelly Oubre, but he's more of a guy who will guard, like, point guard, shooting guards. I know the last matchup that I was at in the Capital One Arena against the Celtics, Oubre was trying to guard Marcus Morris, who's not like an imposing offensive player by any means, but he just kept getting bodied in the post, where Morris would just like fade with one of those turnaround fadeaways, and it worked way too many times. So Oubre is definitely developing and improving, but his defense against some of the bigger, more physical forwards in the league still has a long way to go. And we're going to get into it in the final segment a little bit more about the history of LeBron complaining and getting away with travels and different things like that. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously basically what you can hope for as a Wizards fan is that Cleveland doesn't really have their act together with all of their new players, and they might commit a lot of turnovers, or I think Jordan Clarkson was hitting like threes all over the court in his first game with the Cavs after he got traded, and you just can't expect him to be going off and knocking down, like, you know, being automatic from beyond the arc again. So yeah, you gotta, it's kind of hope for an off shooting night. You gotta play perfect and shoot a high percentage. You need to move the ball incredibly well against them to make them really work defensively, and just don't let the Cavs get to their pace. I think they're a team that really likes to get out in transition and run, especially with the new athletes that they've added. So it's basically, you know, if the Wizards turn this into a track meet, they're probably not going to have too much success.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting because it's almost like, you know, everyone's so excited for first game of the season, first game of the year, when you have the team shakes up and everything. It feels like that now.
Yeah.
You know, all these huge trades, there are two games where, I mean, with the Thunder and the Celtics both have the Celtics have a better season than Thunder, but, you know, two good playoff teams, they do well in both games. And then, you know, you have this week break, and you're kind of like, oh, man, just been itching to see how everything's going to shake out.
Yeah. So we're going to take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back with our final segment with Joe Kochovic to talk about the history of the Wizards, Celtics. Sorry, my God, I am stuck on the Celtics. First was Kyrie, and now I can't even say the team. Wizards Cavaliers is the matchup Thursday night. We're going to talk about the history of that rivalry, especially in the mid-2000s when they faced, when they squared off in three straight playoff appearances. So stay tuned with the Locked On Wizards podcast. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we are back for the end of our Locked On Wizards podcast tonight, and we are doing a Throwback Thursday to a series of seasons and playoff matchups between the Wizards and Cavaliers between 2006 and 2008, and that's when the Wizards had their big three of Gilbert Arenas, Anton Jameson, and Caron Butler. Arenas was injured and didn't play all of the games in that final playoff matchup in the series in 2008, but we're just going to talk a little bit about how the Cavaliers were able to come away victorious each of those times in LeBron's first three ever appearances in the playoffs, and what went wrong for the Wizards. It was definitely a close matchup, especially back in 2006, which was maybe the highlight of the playoff series. Two of those games went to overtime, the final two games, and all of them were decided by tiny, tiny margins. What do you think was your favorite moment, Joe, from any of these three series between the Cavs and Wizards back when we were in high school?
Gosh, any of the three series. I have to say, well, it's a toss-up, as Wizards fans won't like this, but the Game 5, LeBron's game-winning layup in overtime. Well, there was, you know, 1 second left. You had to get the full length of the court. And then Damon Jones, the series clincher, you know, to end the series and finally shut up all of my Wizards fans' friends from continuously talking trash to me. I think that it obviously doesn't compare, but that night and when the Cavs beat the Wizards the first time they were in the playoffs, and then it's probably a second to winning the NBA, a very distant second to winning the NBA Finals, just because, you know, that's peak right when we were in high school, man, and all of my friends are from Wizards fans. Gosh, that was a peak trash talk series right there. Yeah, there was not. It was every period of class, you know. My phone message box was full whenever the Cavs lost. That first series, obviously the Cavs three game winning shots. In a six-game series is a pretty good memory for me.
Yeah, the best game of that series in 2006 was definitely Game 5 between... it was a 121-120 Cavaliers victory, and then LeBron and Gilbert Arenas combined for 89 points. LeBron had 45, Gil had 44. Just a crazy night. And correct me if I'm wrong, is this the game that went into overtime after Gilbert Arenas' 30-footer with, like, 2 seconds left?
No, that was Game 6. That was a closeout, man.
Oh, okay.
If he hit that three, the series would have been over. And, oh, man. They had Yeah, after that shot, I was like, okay, this is not – that I had to ignore, you know, like –
What do you mean? You thought the series was over after Gilbert's three? You thought the Wizards just had all the momentum going into that overtime session?
I thought it was going to go to a game seven because I forget the game, but I think the Cavs were down in the fourth quarter. Came back and took the lead, and then what? It was like 3 seconds left. Gosh, man! And that three pointer he hit was like. It was like as soon as he caught it in bounds, he just jacked it up.
Guard that. It was like a modern day Steph Curry. Like, you know, you just need to be any side of half court, like be ready for him to shoot it. Yeah, Gilbert, he was a legend that series, but you know, like it's just tough because I can't really think of a favorite moment because none of the games really mean anything. So like, of course, Gilbert catches and shoots from 30 feet to send it into overtime, but then in overtime he missed back-to-back free throws. After the first one, LeBron went up to him. The Wizards were up by one at this point. He goes up and he's like, hey, if you miss this next free throw, the game's over, by the way. And I don't know how much time was left in overtime, but right after that LeBron like got trapped and kicked it to Larry Hughes, who found Damon Jones, who went in with 12 seconds remaining in the game, probably didn't play like at all the entire season. And he knocked down this, like, 20-footer to win the game. I don't know how much time was left. I think there was even time on the clock, maybe, like, 5 seconds or something, but the Wizards couldn't answer, and that was just heartbreaking.
Yeah, it couldn't have been more than 10 seconds left. And, you know, Arenas was he had been, like, an 85-90% free throw shooter. I mean, the guy shot, can't hit on a shot. He was a great shooter. You know, I think even in that broadcast, the guy, Hubie Brown was calling him, he might have said, you know, that's the one guy you don't want to foul. And yeah, that must have been for a Wizards fan. That must have been crushing.
I've got to double check how many minutes Arenas played that game, because I'm sure he was totally winded by overtime, carrying his team with 30 whatever points, and you know, basically being the one reliable scorer for the Wizards.
Yeah, had it been almost the whole game. And you know, it's pretty funny. I can't imagine LeBron doing something like that now. Going up and actually, I guess in the finals 2 years ago, he did talk a little trash to Steph Curry.
Oh yeah, was that the finals the Cavaliers won, right? When Draymond Green was out.
When we won Game Six to send it into Game Seven, it was. The game was probably we were up 10 with. I forget when Curry got tossed. There were probably like 3 or 4 minutes left. And Curry kind of pump faked, and it didn't work. And he still went up for the layup, and LeBron just swatted him out of bounds and started talking trash. And everyone was like, "Wow, like that." I mean, that was an awesome block. But it was you don't really see him talk a lot of trash like on the court like that, which is shocking. And it's also that those free throws. I mean, Wizards fans didn't like LeBron before. Like Wizards fans were the original, you know, LeBron. LeBron haters, even before, you know, Cleveland fans when he was in Miami. And definitely talking trash to Arenas in between those free throws was a solidifying moment for DC forever hating LeBron.
Yeah, especially all those travels, too. But get this, in this game six, guess how many total seconds of rest LeBron James and Gilbert Arenas had to combined?
What year did they both play the whole game?
Yeah, they both played 53 minutes. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
That's nuts. And, like, this was the first series, but it was also the sixth game, and this was back in the era where they would do, like, I'm pretty sure it wasn't all, like, games, days rest or, like, 2 days rest or whatever it is. I think now everything, at least in the finals, like, you have 2 days off between each game, but this was back before that, when they were playing. I don't think there were any back-to-backs, but, like, there was much less rest. So LeBron and Gil both playing, carrying their teams. Like, I can understand you have no legs left, but it's still some crucial, devastating missed free throws in Wizards history.
Yeah, I think there's basically, they used to just do 1 day for travel. Now they, you know, draw everything out, kind of. But, you know, I really do think they'd say the best team wins always wins a seven-game series. That series, the Wizards definitely were the better team. I mean, you can do. There's something to be said for allowing three game-winning shots, but I mean, you know, when there are three game winners hit against you and you lose every game by 1 point, two of them in overtime, you know, there's definitely a little bit of luck involved. Maybe you say a little bit of uncalled travels or something like that.
Yeah, the Cavaliers had an awful team. Didn't they make it to... I think they lost to the Pistons in the next round or something.
Yeah. But it went, you know, it went seven games. We definitely had the best... I mean, LeBron, can't knock the guy. He's definitely an amazing player. But team-wise, the Wizards were just such a better overall team. We had a better individual talent. But.
One of my other favorite... It wasn't necessarily, like, one moment, but Deshaun Stevenson just... not backing down from the challenge against LeBron. I think in 2008 especially, because that was actually a close series, and in 2007 the Cavs just swept the Wizards and no game was less than like 7 points. But seeing Deshaun kind of like being one of those original type of 3-and-D type of guys who just is there to be an enforcer and hit shots from the corner when it's kicked to him, it was impressive. And then of course Deshaun like got his revenge against LeBron in 2011 when LeBron totally disappeared in the finals and the Mavericks were able to beat him.
The biggest knock on LeBron's resume, I think, is that Dallas series. I was rooting against them. He had just left Cleveland. The Cuban team, I was rooting very hard against the Heat. But that finals, you know, feels like finals losses. Like Golden State had a 73-win team and signed Durant. I didn't think the Cavs could win. I wanted them to win last year. But that final for LeBron really just completely disappeared. And actually, I think Stevenson was partying at some club, and he had a FLBJ with a middle finger on it. Like his shirt. That was just the shirt he was wearing.
That's even more classic than the new Death Row DC shirts, I would say.
The other Deshaun Stevenson was from that series. I forget what game it was, but the Cavs were up like 20 or something, and Reggie Miller was calling the game. But Stevenson hit a three right in LeBron's face. But I mean, you know, it's the third quarter, we're up by 20 or 25 or something, and he does the hand wave. You can't see me right in LeBron's face. And it's like, oh, come on, man. You know, the game's got to be a little closer. But you're right. He never was backing down, even down 25. You hit three in his face.
Isn't it just abnormally freakish beyond belief, like how many incredible playoff series LeBron James has had for the past dozen years? You know, we're talking about stuff that happened in 2006 when LeBron was 21, his first ever career playoff game. He had a triple double. He's still like as efficient, if not more efficient, as a 33-year-old. Like, he's still most likely going back to the finals this year. It's just unbelievable. Like when Paul Pierce got his jersey retired a week or so ago, like, it was just crazy because, like, the dude's been around forever. Like, he started in this era with, like, Antoine Walker playing in so many playoff series, and then it was just him, and the Celtics were awful, and then finally they got KG and Ray Allen, and he had, like, all these new chapters where he won the championship and then went over to the Nets and competed in the playoffs, and then he went to the Wizards, and then he had, like, his retirement tour where he didn't play it at all again in the for the Clippers. It's just, like, that dude's lasted forever and was a superstar for most of his career. Like, I don't foresee LeBron ever being, like, some guy who comes off the bench, right?
Yeah, another thing is he's never been injured, like, you know, out for significant... I mean, he's been hurt before, but he's never been out for significant time with, you know, sometimes people say just, well, his first year back in Cleveland, he took, a week and a half off, went to Miami. But you know, he's never had a serious... injury where he's missed, you know, LeBron's going to be out 2 months or something like that.
Yeah, and I think that kind of just has to do with the fact that he is a more physically dominant specimen than anyone else besides maybe like Dwight Howard in the league, you know? It's just how many people are that muscular, that strong, and that fast. And I think something that Brian Windhorst was also saying on a podcast I listened to is his joints are just giant, so he's got huge elbows, huge knees, huge ankles, so maybe it's like they're more durable and don't sustain as many injuries. I have no idea how he does it, but it's unbelievable. No. I just wish that they would call more travels on him.
I agree. I don't see him ever as a bench player. What was so frustrating about not to randomly bring up Kyrie Irving as a, you know, annoyed Cavs fan, but you know, it's like, what is 33 now, saying in 2 years, LeBron could be a, 25 and 5 guy who's just kind of, 25 and 5 coasting into your, the sunset of your career. But they really, he could, I feel like he could have turned the key, well, his quote, turned the keys over to Kyrie and just, you know, be even with 27 and 7 or something, just you know, be more of a facilitator, keep the, you know, keep churning along, getting solid numbers, and, you know, have Kyrie be the main offensive guy. But, yeah, well, Kyrie hated their personality. That was a huge personality clash. But, so, yeah, that was just – I don't see LeBron ever being, like, a bench guy. But I thought that really would have been a perfect situation for him to, you know, lower the offensive load, still, you know, be a facilitator with assists, crash the boards, play decent defense. And have Kyrie take over the offense, but I guess that's kind of a pointless, pointless conversation. It's just
People in Cleveland. I think he's about to keep getting racking up those triple doubles until the day he retires. I foresee him becoming kind of like a. I'm thinking it was like Hakeem Olajuwon, kind of just like on the block hitting those fadeaways. Still, like, getting all of these dimes and assists. And then, of course, Hakeem could never really shoot from deep, but LeBron has developed his three-point shot, and he'll be someone who's going to step out and just be a presence, even if he's not, like, the person you have to absolutely key in on, because I'm sure he's going to join some star-studded team when he's 35 with guys who, like, might not even be playing anymore, like, today, who are just entering the league. But we'll see what happens. The last question that I have to leave you with, since you are a Cleveland insider and may have more knowledge than some of the people in D.C. Is there any inclination if LeBron is going to stay or go, and does it all depend on how far his team gets this year? Like, if he missed the finals or if he won a championship, would that impact his decision at all, whether he sticks around in Cleveland?
Yeah, so it's crazy. It's been a extremely up-and-down year. With the Cavs started at 5-7, then they won 18-19. And then what they went, I don't know, like 4-9 or something like that. But during that stretch, you know, personally, I was like, okay, this dude's gone. Like, just body language. He wasn't really trying on the court. Clearly, him and he hated Isaiah Thomas. He wasn't getting along with anyone. It was just a lack of effort. You know, if a guy's out there really not, and like I said, not giving effort for LeBron, you know, getting 20, you know, 7-6 or something like that. But, yeah, but during that stretch, I was like, okay, this dude's gone. I mean, there's a 0% chance. And it's also, him and Dan Gilbert have never gotten along since the letter.
Right.
The Comic Sans. So that's the rumor is that LeBron, well, the Cavs people are saying LeBron wants to stay, but he doesn't want to commit long-term because Gilbert is angling to sell the team. Oh. And if he gets a long-term commitment from LeBron, then you know, the sale will be worth more. And LeBron doesn't want Gilbert to get a lot of money. And it's also rumored that LeBron wants to buy the Cavs, not like near term, but, you know, there's so much going on there. But I'd say it's less than a 50% chance, but it's probably the most probable spot that he stays.
Okay, less than 50% chance that he sticks around. And that... I couldn't imagine that. Like, I know LeBron is not going to sign any long-term contracts. He's going to do 1 year, possibly 2 year, with the option to opt out just because it makes him the most money. But I definitely couldn't imagine him buying the team.
Yeah.
It would be like a Michael Jordan situation where he owns the team and plays for it.
Yeah, that wouldn't be till the maybe not the far future. But, yeah, I'd say maybe, you know, Cavs. He stays 35% chance, maybe 20 Houston, you know, just pulling numbers out of thin air. But right. Yeah, I'd say it's probably the
expert
most likely
numbers,
spot.
So much research and analysis put into these figures. Come on.
Yeah. So I'd say it's the most likely spot, but not, it's, you know, it's not probable that he'll, you know, it's below 50% that he'll stay, but it's probably the most likely spot.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Joe. Get ready for this flood of Twitter followers to start requesting you and wanting you to talk about Cavaliers basketball all day and night. And I appreciate it. Let me know when you get back into the city. It would be great to see you in person.
Yeah, cool thing, man. It was fun.
All right, stay tuned for tomorrow night's Locked On Wizards podcast, recapping the Wizards and Cavaliers matchup. Take it easy, everybody.
Outstanding, so I stand out. Stand out. I'm more babe than a bathhouse. Top gun on my Tom Cruise. Life for keeps and I don't lose. You more than love me.
I got what you need. Nonchalant, got the green on rotation all night. We gon' keep it psychedelic like a cap and a stem. Catch a wave on us. Take a shot, make a friend. Just enjoy the moment. A blue sky walking on his haters. Celebrate every day like a birthday.